Welcome to the Smuggler's Den.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena, a great friendly atmosphere for playing a wide variety of games and for purchasing all of your gaming needs. Check them out online at GameEmpirePasadena.com. Welcome to the Smuggler's Den, Season 2, Episode 1. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and I'm joined, as always, by my eternal host.
And I'm Ben Tully. Be sure to check us out at our various online presences. You can find us on Facebook at The Smuggler's Den. You can email the podcast at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com. And I would normally say something about Twitch TV, but if you were going to try and watch Star Wars, you should go watch TGO's stream.
Oh, that's actually a good idea. He did say it was back and then promptly didn't do it that day.
Did he really not do it that day?
Yeah. But I would definitely recommend TGO's a good player. Watch his stream on Twitch. I'm sure he'll do some stuff. And we're joined today by a special dear friend co-host.
Hello, hello. I'm Neil, the real deal, deck wizard. I go by Red Squadron K on the forums.
All right. So, guys, we're back fresh from Minnesota. Some of us have frostbite. Some of us don't. How was the trip, guys?
The trip was great.
I mean, I had a really great time.
Yeah, I had a great time. I've been having a really hard time all week describing to people how great of a time I had because they asked me, like, oh, how was your trip? And my immediate response was, well, I didn't win. And they're like, was that important for being a good time? And I was like, well, a little bit.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of the other way. Like, I loved meeting everyone. That was my favorite part. I met a lot of people, all of you who came up to me and said, hey, Tiny, I love the podcast. It's great meeting you. That was my highlight of the trip. I got the flu on Saturday, which really put a damper in the trip for me. And I didn't make the cut on Thursday, which really put a damper on the trip for me.
I thought it was pretty amazing to some degree how, like, even on Saturday and Sunday, people were still coming by and being like, I love the podcast. You guys should keep doing it. It was almost like they knew in the back of my mind. I was like, well, why would anybody want to listen to us anymore? Like, people all over the internet right now are turning off the podcast going, well, those guys didn't win. Just turn that down, turn it off.
Yeah, luckily we didn't make any claims about how, like, we're two champions or something. We're just two dudes who play Star Wars, who know something about the game, but apparently not enough to actually make the cut.
Oh. We do know enough to be the only team to support a Navy aggro deck in the top 16, so that's pretty
good. Whoa,
fun.
No spoilers, Ben. No spoilers. So, Neil, how did you end up doing on the day? How many points did you end with?
I was content with my performance on the day. I ended up with 32 points. I actually either went 8-0 all of my games for four of them, and then I went 0-8 in two games.
Okay. And the cut, by the way, was 35. So you were very close to making the cut. How about yourself, Ben? How'd you end up doing on the day?
I had 29 points for the day. I had 3 8-0s, and I was 0-8-ed once, and then I had a 5-4 split.
Okay, not too bad. And I ended up with 34 points, tantalizingly close to the cut. I was the one seed going into the second-to-last round with 29 points, thinking all I have to do is get 5 more points over 2 rounds and I should make it. I ran into Matt Coles, who was the one seed. In my first game, I was light side. I drew no units, lost. And then in the second game, he flipped up 3 of the 4 Hoth objectives in his deck. As Ben already alluded to, we ran a aggro Navy deck, which essentially meant I lost that game as well.
Well, particularly because the 2 of the 3 were the prep for evac.
Yeah, sorry. 2 of the 3 were prep for evac. So when I eventually did end up blowing one up, he was just going to bounce 2 units. So the odds that I actually blew up enough to win were incredibly low. Essentially, as soon as he flipped those up, I realized I had been swept and was not entirely happy.
That's pretty rough.
Yeah. So that was a bit upsetting. And then I went into the last round thinking, as long as I get the 5-4 split, I should be fine. The first game didn't go well. I don't remember exactly what happened. My back was against the wall. I played really well in the second game, got the 5-4 split, and thought, all right, I probably make it despite, you know, having a really unlucky run against Matt Coles, which, by the way, I'm not trying to take anything away from Matt Coles. He played well. But the point is, if you get really unlucky against a good player, you're probably going to lose. You can sometimes pull it out against sort of a mid-tier player, but when you go up against a really good player and you get unlucky, which happens in this game, you're probably going to lose. So I ended up with 34, had to do that, you know, dance around, waiting for them to announce the cut, fingers crossed, and they get to the bottom and they don't read my name, and that's the end of my Star Wars tournament.
Anybody who knows Tiny personally will know whatever he just said there about Matt is like the biggest compliment he can give to a rival opponent right there. you know, he didn't go out of his way and was like, Matt is an amazing player. You know, he did so well. He's now been consistent twice. He did his, you know, yeah, I'm Matt. Matt's a good player. And like, if you do get unlucky against a good player. So that was a really big compliment. So hopefully, you know, anybody who's listening to this isn't going, it's not even just slight. Matt Coles there because he didn't. He just.
It's the only way.
He doesn't know how to be nice to people.
No,
it's
no.
It's the only way he can show affection.
Really, I'm really impressed that Matt made it back to the finals. I mean, that really shows you that Matt is. I don't want to say the best player in the game. I really don't want to say that, so I'm not going to. But I'll say he's very good. How's that?
I mean, you're the one putting it on the internet. Like, whatever you want to do, man.
Matt Coles is very good. I will definitely say that. So good job, Matt Coles, for making the finals. Good job to Dennis for winning the finals. And good job to our buddy Tyler for taking 7. That was a really good
one. He was 10th overall, I believe.
He was 10th. Yeah, okay.
He was 7th going into the cut.
Gotcha. So for taking 10th overall, Tyler, great job. He was a 7th seed going in. The only person from SoCal
was that guy on the way home, though. Like, oh, so I got 10th place. What place did you guys get? Just repeatedly over and over and over again. Facebook messages from all his friends, us being tagged. And it's like, hey, look, you guys are tagged in my Facebook message where all my friends are complimenting me on how awesome I am at this game, and you're not. God, that guy is insufferable.
See? I completely disagree. I think he was totally fine. I think
oh, no,
you
he was
are
totally
just
fine. That was all sarcasm.
Okay, good. Because if I had won the tournament or something,
oh my god!
Oh wow!
Yeah, right. People would have thrown me off the plane. Like random strangers would have known I won.
Yeah, I'm sure you would have like, had the playmat. You would have had the playmat draped around your shoulders.
Right, exactly, like a cape.
Look what I got! Look what I got, everybody!
Look at my new cape.
Gone up to the front with the stewardesses and been like, "Excuse me, this flight. You need to know."
Yeah. Do I get upgraded to first class now that I'm a champion? Just curious, because I'm a champion. If you didn't know that. Yeah, no, I don't think I'd be that bad, but yeah, I'd probably be annoying. I'll have to admit.
They would have asked you about it. It would have been. They would have asked you. You would have been like, "I'm a champion," and been like, "In what?" And then you would have to have done the humming and awing that you always do when somebody asks you what you do in your free time.
Something.
It's like a thing. Competitive thing.
It's kind of like poker.
It's like a card game with adults.
Yeah, but overall, I had a good time, even though I lost, which is really hard for me to say. That's how I know it was a really fun experience, because normally if I lose, it really colors my enjoyment.
Well, I mean, you do have, at this point, it's now 7 days out, and so...
That's true.
The color, it did really color your Friday last week.
Oh, yeah, sure did. It really, really did. And then I got sick Saturday, and so it was basically like, I get home, and my wife said, "How was the trip?" And I'm like, "Not that great." Not that great, actually. I top 16 in Game of Thrones, but still wasn't that great. So, oh well. All right, guys, let's talk about the list we ran. So, we ran a light side list, and we specifically chose this list because it had tons of decent units in it. And that's why I was especially so mad when I didn't draw any against Matt Coles. We didn't run the Han Chewie Falcon builds, because we were worried that we'd run into games like that where we didn't draw any. So who wants to go ahead and tell our viewers the list?
I'll go ahead.
Are you asking that because you don't remember what it is off the top of your head?
I'm trying to spread the communication, my friend.
I think it's because you don't know what the list is.
Oh, yeah? You want to test me?
No, not really.
There you go. All right, go ahead, Neil. What were we running?
So our light side was a vehicle deck. We ran the Smuggler's Affiliation. We had two copies of the Millennium Falcon, two copies of the Protect Y-Wings, prep for evac, two copies of Red 2, Defense of Yavin 4, two copies of the Rebel Fleet, which has Home 1, and two copies of Attack Pattern Delta.
Yeah, and Attack Pattern Delta, I feel like, was the key to that deck because it added a pod that had just tons of units that when you drew up your hand, you always had quality units in it.
Sure. I mean, overall, the deck had what I would call our dream spread of all the things that we've been talking about through the first season of the podcast, right? I mean, it had 8 resources that were not Tauntauns, right? So there was no Force Choke fodder. It had 2 Twists of Fate, which meant that your opponent couldn't always be resting on the back foot, assuming that they would win those various edge battles that they thought they were going to win. You know, it had a ton of black damage in a light side deck, which is, you know, what you need to have in order to win. I thought, you know, playtesting it and going into it, we were pretty confident. This might be a surprise to people, but Tiny was going into Worlds going, we've got a broken deck. This is it. Our light side is broken. People are going to be so upset about how broken our deck is.
Yeah, it is a really good deck. And I do want to stop and give credit real quick. We were really struggling to find a light side deck. We'd been kind of dancing around decks that were similar to this, mostly with Speeders or with Honshui Falcon.
And one day Tyler
showed up to the shop and just sort of dropped this deck on us and was like, hey, here's our light side deck.
It's not quite how it happened.
And I was kind of like,
is that really how you remember it happening?
That's how I remember it happening. Why don't you correct me, Ben?
Do you remember when we all went over to Tyler's house on the Saturday and he presented it to us?
Sure. Whatever. I was being more dramatic, Ben.
How is that more dramatic?
But either way, he presented a list to us. I immediately looked at it and said, no Rogue 3, Millennium Falcon. This is interesting.
It was really interesting. I really enjoyed the deck. Like, even though not winning with it overall, like, I still enjoyed the deck. I had one game, Tiny, similar to yours, where I didn't see any units for a couple turns, and the game was lost. I had lost the game. But in the last 3 turns, I was able to keep playing the Falcon and looping the Falcon and just kind of playing the Falcon over and over again. Still took down 2 objectives.
Nice.
Like, the game was over. The dial was at 9.
Right.
And, like, I still took down 2 objectives with the Millennium Falcon.
I do think that our deck ended up, both of our decks probably, but especially this late side one, centered more on going for a more consistent build, where we would always be taking out 2 objectives even if we lost, and always having a good game, as opposed to, I was surprised by how many, like, pure speeder decks or sleuth decks there were that felt more all-in, where if you get the setup, you just stomp face, but ours, I felt like we were going for something a little more always good.
Yeah. I mean, that had been our mantra right from the beginning, was not explosive, but consistent.
Yep. I think the Honshui Falcon deck is more explosive. If you get that, like, turn 1 Falcon into Chewie, turn 2 Falcon into Luke thing going, that's way better. But you also have those games where you just don't draw those guys and you're just like, protector, cruddy unit, your go. And you do that 2 turns in a row and you get way behind.
Protector Wookiee, okay.
Yeah. So
nobody dies, but you also don't do any damage.
That's why I was so upset when against Matt Coles. You know, the guy that I was like, yes, I get to play Matt Coles. This is going to be really fun. Even if I lose to Matt Coles, this will be a good game.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my consistent deck. And I draw no units. And I'm just looking at it going, really? If this is the case, why aren't I running Honshui Falcon? Because at least I'd have an explosive deck along with this.
I mean, I've saw it a couple times. In my last round, I was sitting next to my 5th round opponent. And he leaned over and he was like, so can you believe my luck? And so he was running a Honshui Falcon. And so there have been plenty. I forget off the top of my head how many, if any, made the cut. But it seemed like, you know, that everybody kind of I ran into On the higher end of the player spectrum, we're running something similar to that, if not exactly that. And they seem to be having a lot of luck with it. And I feel like my opponent from the fifth round, his name was Dion, like I feel like he must have been holding all of the bad luck for that deck. Because he turned to me and he showed me his second turn hand, which was three Twists of Fate, two Crossfires, and a Resource. And he was like, how am I supposed to win if this is my hand? I'm like, you don't win in that situation, good sir. You don't.
You don't at all. That's pretty funny. Real quick, I want to talk about what we expected the deck to do going in and what matchups we thought we'd be really good against and what we thought we might struggle with.
Well, I thought that the deck was going to do really well against everything other than like a first turn Palpatine. I thought that it really had a lot of good... I felt like it just put a lot of good pressure on the dark side. That every turn you're playing a couple of vehicles, attacking, doing some damage so that you really set a fast clock. Even if they're killing your units, you're just putting out more and doing damage every turn.
Yep.
First turn Palpatine, I also thought maybe a full... like a 100% Hoth-based Navy deck would also have been probably something that was running General's Imperative with Vader's Fist, where the card advantage was really kind of severely slanted in the dark side's favor. Maybe something where they were able to be playing like a ton of Battle of Hoths to counter the very large number of edge icons that our light side deck had. I felt like that would have probably been a very pretty big bad matchup, not maybe the worst matchup, but just a bad matchup overall.
Interesting. Yeah, I really was only worried about one thing, and that was first turn Palpatine. My thought was something like, if they tried to go the Executor route, the Executor doesn't do enough to control the board early. Like, it takes a while to set up the whole win combo with Killing Cold. You have to put out a lot of bad units. If they're going that route, they're not putting out Palpatine. And we have so much black damage. It was really just tactics icons. And it wasn't even just tactics icons. It was only tactics icons against top-level players. Because against players that flood the board too much, our edge icons were so good in that deck, I actually wasn't that worried. Because I was like, even if they have tactics, I'm going to win the edge and do damage first. But right. Against somebody who's a good player, for instance, Tom Philippi in my, I think it was my third round game, he went first turn, Holocron Palpatine, and played almost nothing else to the board the whole game. And every single turn, it was just three tactics icons. And I'm sitting there going, how many units do I need to push through damage? I need like 10 units just to do a couple damage points. It just was a complete disaster.
Yeah, Holocron into Palpatine, that really seems to be a problem sometimes. I mean, there was that period of time where... you know, the Sith Visions deck that you were running, you ran because there were those moments where you could get out with, you had the right cards in hand and there was a combo with Bip Fortuna and the, you know, the Sarlacc. You could get out a first turn Palpatine and not really be hurting for resources. And then here's the Holocron. It's like, oh, it's just a two card combo. Cool. All right. Sounds good.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just Palpatine. You can get out Vader. You can get out Executor. Essentially, you get that pressure point immediately. And that was what I was worried about going in. But my thought was, how often is that going to happen? How often is my opponent getting a first turn Palpatine?
I'm sure somebody could actually do the math for us. I can't, but... and don't let Andrew do it, but...
you know what the answer was? The answer was too often, because it happened once. And had I not lost that game, I would have made the cut.
There we
go. All right.
He's still not bitter about it, folks.
No, not at all. Should we move on to the dark side deck then?
Yeah, the dark side deck.
I think that's what people are really interested in. People were surprised that we ran a Navy aggro deck. And I want to start by saying the reason we ran it was the same reason why we ran our light side deck. We wanted a deck that was consistent. Clearly, the Sith control with Vader, Palpatine, Executor was incredibly explosive, was really good at controlling the board. If you're playing Killing Cold, you have an auto-win combo that you hit something like 30% of the time. But there's tons of games in our testing where we would just be like, all right, No Palpatine, Vader, or Executor for three turns, and now I lost to a speeder deck. Wonderful.
Right. Here's another Kuati Security Patrol. Oh, look, I drew another one.
So, what was the deck then, Ben? Why don't you tell us, especially since you built a lot of this deck.
I did build a lot of this deck. Thank you, Tiny, for just, like, making sure that everybody knew. I'm surprised that you didn't try and steal all of the glory for this one.
What glory? We didn't win anything.
Tyler made top 16. So the deck consisted of, it was two copies of Imperial Command that has Mahdi in it, two copies of Defense Protocol that has the TIE Attack Squadron, two copies of Deploy to Fleet, which is the Death Squadron Star Destroyer, and then we had single copies of the Crash on Tatooine, which is the Jawas. We had a single copy of Unstoppable Advance, which are the AT-ATs. We had one copy of the Devastator, which is Death and Despair. And then we had one copy of Sabotage in the Snow, which, to be honest, we were running for the forward command post, but I also really like the Snowtrooper Vanguard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we would have run two if we could have. If that card isn't limit one, that's two for sure. But yeah, I think my favorite card or favorite pod in the deck was the Jawa pod. I just loved playing a Jawa and have people look at the board, look at me, look at the board, look at me, and then say something like, Jawa? It was really fun. And then half the time I would be like, yeah, I got totally screwed, man. I haven't seen any of my scum stuff. And they'd kind of look at me again, and they'd know I was completely full of it. But it was fun.
I mean, we should just clarify here for anybody who's thinking, like, well, you can't run a Jawa unless you're running the scum affiliation, and you're not running the scum affiliation because you're running Unstoppable Advance. You're right, we're running the Navy affiliation, and no, you do not need to have a resource match for a zero-cost card.
That's correct. And there's only one card in that entire pod that actually needs a scum objective, and it has two force icons, so it's a good edge card anyway.
And if you happen to see the scum objective, if you happen to see Crash on Tatooine, it's crazy to be able to just, like, first turn, okay, I'm going to Utini that. And they're like, you're going to what? To the what?
Yeah, I did that against somebody. They played the Falcon resource that cost two. It was like most of their turn. And I just immediately, before they could use it, I was like, I'll Utini that. And they're like, what? Oh, that was a very pleasurable moment for me.
Pleasurable moments.
Yes. You heard it.
Correct. And so Tiny's right. I designed some of this deck. It was essentially, it started off originally as a TIE Fighter Swarm, and then it kind of moved into kind of beefier units. And then there was a moment where we sat down and Tiny was like, why don't you just put Jawas in? And then some debate about what the last objective set that we were going to include in it was. And we ended up going with the Devastator, where we also felt you could have gone with the AT-STs as an option.
Or my favorite, Imperial Blockade.
Imperial Blockade. We also at one point had Recon Mission in there.
Yep. That's where the deck started. And that was a good idea, because it helped with the TIE Attack Squadron.
Right.
The problem is, it just didn't have units, and we again wanted a deck where we were always putting out units. And so let's now talk about the secret of this deck. This deck is the coolest deck I've ever played, because what it does, it's like a Muhammad Ali rope-a-dope deck. So what you do is you just put out dudes with shields, right? And they attack you, and you just shield your objective, and you take a little damage, and then you play some more guys, and you go, pass. And they look at you funny, and they're like, you're running a Navy deck. What are you doing? Oh, okay, fine, you're an idiot. And they attack again, and you're like, uh-huh, I'll shield that. I'll pass after you play some more units. And once the dial hits six, they're so used to you passing, they're just going all in every turn. The dial hits six, and you just go, this turn I win. Bloop, bloop, bloop. You knock out all three, take the dial to 7, to 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, ball game. People are stunned when that happens.
And it was one of those things where the deck was doing it pretty well, where, like, even if you didn't win every turn on turn 6, it set you up into that position where you just held off another turn, right? So the dial goes up to 8, and then you do the three objectives there. Or if you get up to 9, you just do two objectives at 9. And it had a lot of games where it was just doing that over and over and over again, to the point where, like, you know, you could keep all of your units on the board because you had so many shields, and then, you know, your opponent was, like, feeling the pressure because of all those shields. They would attack outright, and that turn where they attack outright and ditch their whole card into the edge of battle is always a turn where you look at them and you're like, yeah, so I win here now because you focused out everything that you have. And they're like, how do you win here? You need another 5 clicks on the dial. And you go, yeah, so let me play this Star Destroyer for 2, and I'll play this AT-AT for 2, and here's a command post. And so that's the game, right? And then they look at you and you're like, yeah, I guess that's the game.
Yeah, that happened a lot at Worlds. I mean, we're so far out now that I don't remember every game or which decks I won or lost with, but I know in that last round where I had to win to make the cut, in quotes, it was with the Navy deck that I won and got the 5. He blew up like 1 as his dark side. He moves to his light side deck. He thinks he's just crushing me, and then hit the dial on 6 on what, like turn 4 or 3, and then it's just ball game. And he was stunned. He was knocked out of the tournament and stunned.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the Navy deck was the more consistent of our 2 decks throughout the day. You'll have to ask Tyler when you interview him, but I think most of his losses were from the light side. And I know that I really only had 1 full loss with my dark side. I lost another game because I made a really dumb mistake at the end. But overall, this Navy deck is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know it's going to sound crazy. It might be the best deck in the meta. I know everyone thinks the Sith deck is the best and overpowered, and I would definitely agree that the Sith deck is more oppressive and that it is more explosive, but this deck is so consistent and is really good and has a lot of answers to a lot of decks. Having that AT-AT that blows up enhancements just answers so many decks directly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you can make the claim it's the top deck in the meta if it didn't win Worlds. I know you need to have a 2 deck combo for that, but at the same time, if it was that dominating, I don't know, maybe it should have done better. I think it's one of those ones where like people can take it as a framework and just fit in their version of play with it. And I think that we'll probably see a lot of people kind of making little tweaks to it. You know, I really like it with the AT-STs in it, and they'll take out the AT-ATs and a Devastator and put the 2 copies of that in, or they'll take out the Jawas and put something else in from the Navy. You can always put in a Tark in there and watch your opponent be sad when you have 4 damage on everything and blow them all up simultaneously.
Yeah, that's true. Let me say this, Ben. If I didn't think it was the best in the meta, I wouldn't have played it.
That's a good point. I mean, we all kind of did, so.
Although, I don't know if you guys remember, we're in the van pool on the way to the airport, and I turn to you guys and I say, I think we might need a new dark side deck. And I thought you guys were going to murder me right there.
Yeah, I was gonna kill you.
Yeah, John Bruno talked us down, but it was close to pitchforks and torches there.
Oh, yeah. But so overall, the deck was good. What about matchups? Were there any specific matchups that you guys struggled with on the day?
I mean, I don't know if I wouldn't call it a matchup. I would just call it any time. And maybe this is just the any time there was like a really large incongruity between turns, right? So like if you had a good start, right? For example, if this dark side deck, if you had a great start where you had a bunch of resources, but they happened to be all your character resources, and the next turn, your light side opponent played Han and just cleared him out. Like, you know, that's something that's been around since the beginning of the game. But at the same time, it was any time that type of setup happened, where essentially an entire round was mitigated somehow, then that's when the deck really suffered. It needs to consistently be putting out another unit, another 2 units, another unit, for it to have the board presence to maintain and then come in for the win at the end of the game.
Yep, I'd agree with that. It seems to me that you're right, that it's not as much matchup-oriented as it is. Sometimes it struggles on its own. Like, we've had games where you get a whole bunch of resources turn 1 and you're giggling with glee, and then turn 2, you get more resources, or just like Stormtroopers, you don't get any of those units you need to actually finish. I had that in 1 game where I just didn't see the Star Destroyers or the AT-ATs and just never found the finishing units, and the game took forever. I think I ended up winning that game, but it wasn't in the normal plan. It was more like, okay, I guess I'm going to win by the dial getting to 12 by just clicking it every turn.
I did have a game like that too. I took out no objectives. It was somewhere in my second round where if you didn't even know what the deck was supposed to do, you'd be like, okay, so there's a Sandcrawler on the table and a Snowtrooper Vanguard and a whole bunch of other like small units. Like, what exactly is going on here?
So it's like a terrible control deck. Nice job, SoCal. Nice job.
Job, SoCal. Way to take it down.
All right. Well, let's talk about our playtesting a little bit. How did we do this? What decks did we look at? Were there any decks that we sort of regret passing on?
Well, hold on, Tiny. Let's talk about Neil and mine playtesting and how sometimes you were present for it and sometimes you weren't.
Well, I would say this. Certainly at the beginning, for the first month or so until we got locked into decks, I was a very active playtester. But you're right. Once we got pretty locked into decks, I started realizing I need to do some serious Thrones testing because we had gotten pretty locked into our Star Wars decks. You are correct.
So I just want to say that if you had said to us, like when you switched over to Game of Thrones, that 4 weeks before Worlds, if you had said to us then, I'm not sure about this Dark Side deck. You know, maybe we should look at something else. We could have probably have worked on something as opposed to on the Vanpool ride to the hotel the day before the event.
You sound kind of bitter about this.
You know what? It was a team effort, Tiny, and there was a lot of I in your team. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, it's really the problem with trying to play two games at a top competitive level. It's not a good idea. I do not recommend it. It doesn't go that well.
Right. I mean, it's a lot of testing for this if you're really taking it seriously.
Yeah. But let's go back to before we locked into our decks. What were some decks we looked at? I know we did something really interesting, which I still liked. We had a pretty sizable team, so we sort of divided things up. I believe, Ben, you had the Imperials. I had Sith. Did you have Scum, Neil?
A little bit. We didn't even really test Scum much because there just wasn't a whole lot there.
Yeah. I do know you were in charge of breaking Leia for a while, and you were working really hard on that, and I was really hoping you could.
Yeah, I think I got pretty close. I still have a deck that I really enjoy running. It's fun, and I think it's a really good, like, tier 1.5, tier 2 deck. It's just not quite Worlds level.
Right, and I think I was doing, speeder decks, because that's what I'd been playing a little bit for tournaments. And then, Ben, what were you playtesting? Were you doing the Jedi?
For the light side, it was like Jedi and smuggler stuff.
Okay.
The Jedi was less, or the light side was less of like a specific deck types, I think, that we were trying to work on.
Right. So I like that idea. I think that was a good initial start. If you can start far enough out, you can sort of assign people different jobs, and they can look at all the different possibilities in there. Like, you know, we found the Sith deck really quickly. I mean, that didn't take much to build, and very quickly realized this deck is insane. And I remember there was like a 2-day period where I was like, we are running this deck, period. And I was doing insane things like doing 18 damage on a turn and winning, and every game getting Killing Cold. And then I remember vividly saying, hey, Neil, can you test this deck and take Killing Cold out of the objective set and just try to play without it? And he was like, sure. And then he got absolutely lambasted.
Yeah, there was no hope in that game.
And that was one of those moments where we were like, oh, yeah, this deck actually has some real serious drawbacks. The upside of it is really high, but the downside is really low.
Yeah, I mean, you had even like a... As we got closer to Worlds, you had a period of time where you busted out the deck and were using it as the counter test.
Yep.
And you had two games in a row where you're like, why aren't we running this? Like, just use the Force Choke and Vader's ability like 5 times in a row. This is amazing. And then you had the game where you didn't see anything. And you're like, never mind. I understand now.
Yep. And I remember loaning it to Chris, who was also part of our team. And two games in a row, I was like, Chris, this is going to be what everyone plays. Can you please test this against me? He's like, yeah, sure, no problem. This deck looks awesome. Two games in a row, he drew none of the big three, threw the deck down in disgust, and was like, I hate this game sometimes, and then walked away. And I was like, yep, that's why we're not playing that deck.
And that's not an exaggeration.
Yeah. Another deck that we were trying for a while that I still enjoy was a kind of Jedi mains deck with Han and Lando and Redemption.
Yep.
Because it had 7 or 8 resources, and if you saw the big guys, it could really just control the board and do a lot of cool stuff. But kind of like the Sith deck you're just talking about, if you don't see the big guys, it doesn't have a whole lot going for it.
And then there was the period of time where essentially what we did was we were having this discussion about the light side, right? We hadn't settled on anything, and we were like, what we need to do is we need to go through all of the cards and pick out cards that have consistently high black blast damage. And so if we had done this for our with vehicles, I think we would have landed very closely to the deck that we ended up bringing to Worlds. But what we did was we did it for, like, characters. And so we were going through the Jedi.
It was a debacle.
I remember trying to be like, the Godals are great. We have to have the Godals in there. And then, like, I even forget what other units we had or objective sets. And we built it, and we played one game with it, and we were like, nope, this is terrible. Back to the drawing board.
Yep. I remember that vividly. I was like, this is the answer, guys. We got it out. We laid them all out. We built this deck. It was so bad. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. It was pretty awful.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I was hoping somebody would make Godel's good. No one was able to do it.
Yeah,
probably with the next cycle.
One thing that I think we made a mistake on was Sleuths. I think we didn't take seriously enough that everyone was going to be playing the Palpatine Vader Executor deck. And in that deck, I think that deck struggles a bit with Sleuths.
Honey, where would your empirical evidence come from that? Maybe the fact that it ended up losing to Sleuths for the championship?
I mean, it's difficult because, like, in that game, he got the perfect draw. So it's hard to say whether that's sort of embracing the luck element of Sleuths. My evidence would more be that he was able to make it to the finals. So probably he was running into a lot of Sith decks and getting a decent setup going. Because it feels like if what you're doing as Sith is really trying to holocron into Palpatine, if you are forced to play the terrible units, you're sort of going against what that whole deck is trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wonder if maybe our other mistake, kind of on a more general note with that, is that we really tried to go for these super consistent decks that would always do very well and not embrace the luck factor of the game and go for more explosive decks.
Yeah, and for me, I think it's a personality thing. For me, I just can't do that. I do not have a problem losing when I lose to skill, right? But I just, my mentality really struggles with losing to luck. It's why I don't play poker anymore. I just don't have the mentality to be able to just have it wash off my back and say, oh, well, that was luck. I just struggle with that. And so I think a lot of that was me really trying to push that. We need a consistent deck. So I apologize for that if it mangled anyone else's playtesting.
I mean, I've been spending a lot of time this week thinking about how similar Star Wars game is right now with poker. And having that play over in my mind over and over again, where you can be the person who's playing super consistently, right? Like, I mean, the modern way of playing Texas Hold'em right now is that you know what all the odds are, and you're pretty good at calculating pot odds. And so you just play what you know based – if you were to exclude the human interaction, right, the bluffing and the kind of that part of the game, right? You can play poker where it's just the methodical, I should bet here, I shouldn't bet here.
Right.
The pot odds say I bet here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you do that consistently, you win ultimately outright. But there are always those situations where, like, yeah, the pot odds say I should bet big here. And if I, you know, if it pays off, it pays off. And then that person hits their, you know, gut shot straight draw. And you go, well, F me. Like, I mean, like, that is just, you know, it's the nuts. And I think we were using that terminology quite a bit during the Worlds. It's like, well, I was playing a guy and he got the nuts.
Yep.
And that was that. All this week I've been thinking, I'm like, how do I feel about a game where if you get the nuts, you win?
Yeah, it's interesting because in Thrones, It's kind of like that. Like, I had a game where I was playing against a guy who was running a certain type of deck, and I drew up my opening hand, and I knew it was the direct counter to his deck. And I was like, not mulliganing that hand, I win. And that's what happened. First turn, I essentially won the game. He just kind of looked at me, shook his head, and I was like, what am I supposed to do about that? You just got the nut draw. So I would say it's not only in Star Wars, but I would agree that Star Wars seems to have much more of this element involved. Like, if you just draw up a couple sleuths and the right objectives, you get a huge lead just automatically.
Yeah, and I think that one of the big differences between this and something like poker is that there are just so many fewer rounds in this that you can't really play averages necessarily to think that, like, the consistent deck will win out. Maybe over, like, five tournaments it would, but
right.
On any particular given day, over even six, seven, eight rounds, I'm thinking next year, well, who knows what the card pool will be like, but I'm thinking in the future it might be better to embrace some of the luck and really just go for a plan A that is bonkers, crazy, dominant good, and your plan B is maybe okay if they don't do too well.
Yeah, that's a reasonable mindset, that if that's the way the game is built, especially with the scoring system. I think that's part of the problem. You know, I got the game started with a scoring system that really benefited consistent decks. You know, you just wanted to win the match. And now you really have to win. Like, if you lose 8-0, you're pretty much out of the tournament. Like, I'd like to see the numbers if anyone made the cut who had a single 0-8 experience. Because I only had the one, and I only lost two other games on the whole day, and I still didn't make the cut. So my guess is that no one who went 0-8 in a round made the cut.
Yeah, if I had gone 0-8 once in the day, then you could still make the cut.
But the difference is,
hypothetically, right? Yeah, you had to get 8-0s and 1-5-4.
Right, but also the difference is, if you go 0-8, it's easier to 8-0, right?
And that's the problem. That's what I saw, because I got 0-8'd in my first game against a really good player who made top 16, and he got really great opening draws. And then the rest of the day I was mostly playing easier opponents.
Yeah, I hate to do this again, but the scoring system is a problem. Because if you look at the final people who made the top 16, there were a couple people that sort of snuck in. Like, one of the people at the bottom had an SOS of, like, 150, and mine was 203 or something. So essentially what happened for that person is he was probably playing somewhere near the bottom, actually, in the fifth round. I'm playing Matt Coles at the top board. He's near the bottom board. He wins 8-0. Then he plays someone sort of in the middle, goes 8-0 again, and leapfrogs me, who went top board and then seventh board, because I went 0-8 and 5-4. Which, some people might say that's actually a really good thing. For me, I don't like that. I like, if you're at the top board in the fifth round, someone at the bottom can't pass you. Someone in the middle might be able to pass you, but someone in the bottom shouldn't be able to exploit playing low-level players and just really vault on up the charts. I don't like that method.
Yeah, and you get really penalized for playing other good players.
Exactly. That's the part that's really weird about having such an all-or-nothing 8-point system. I know no one else liked the 3-2 thing. I was probably the only person in the world who liked it. So maybe some sort of middle ground where wins are worth 3 and the tiebreaker's worth 1. So then it's a 4-3 or a 6-0. It mitigates it a little bit. I think right now it's just too swingy.
Do you guys have any thoughts on what you think of the game currently? Maybe anything you can see, obviously, that you think could be changed that would make it better? And just based solely on the tournament experience at Worlds.
For me, there's two things. The first one is, and I have not been shy about this, the scoring system needs to be fixed. I thought it would be fixed going into Worlds. We had the Octagon tournament, which had the same problem. We had some local shop tournaments, which allowed us to really see clearly the scoring system issues, where we saw like people who were definitely at the lower end of the players in the shop playing other people at the bottom and then somehow making the cut. And we were kind of like, wait, what happened? Was there a mistake in the scoring or something? And you're looking through and you're like, nope, it's just a crazy scoring system. And then the other one for me is first turn Holocron into Palpatine. To me, that's a big problem with the game. Palpatine is already an excellent card, which is fine, except for that he's an oppressive card. And to get an oppressive card out turn one that can completely control and lock down the board from the first turn moving forward, I think is a bad idea. A second turn Palpatine is scary enough. I think a first turn Palpatine is really bad for the game.
What about you, Neil?
Yeah, the Worlds was a great experience, and it really shows... It really opened my eyes to how much luck there is in the game. But I also, I guess going forward, what I really want to look for is I personally am going to really work on trying to make Scum work, make kind of character rebels work, and really see if the game is so skewed that those sorts of decks can't do even okay against more dominant kind of mainstream decks, then that's going to be really disappointing. But I think that there might be more there that people just kind of latched on to. Sith control has direct damage. I see how it works. It's easy to play. That hopefully with some more time and testing and love and sweat and tears, we can find ways to broaden the meta without necessarily saying, oh, this is broken, that's broken, everything's broken.
Yeah, I look forward to this period because I know Neil's a very creative guy, and we kind of stifled Neil because it was like, all right, these are our decks. If you have some little tweaks you want to make to the decks, that's awesome. Let's do that. But we really need to test these decks. We need to play test against other top-level decks. And so we played a lot of the same stuff. And Neil, especially amongst us, is the most creative, interesting deck builder. I know when Neil first joined the meta, I was like, I don't know if this Neil guy is any good. Like, he seems to play okay, but he has no idea how to make a deck. And what I didn't realize is Neil was just the opposite of me, right? Like, I'm the guy who always brings a good deck, and Neil's like, hey, what's fun is making cool, crazy decks. And yeah, sometimes they don't work, but that's all right. Next week's a new week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so I would think, I mean, we had a lot of discussions, I think, on and off the books with various people from other podcasts and from the boards and maybe or maybe not people from FFG themselves. And I really think, and I like this idea that the game is still in a really early state. I mean, like, if you look at it compared to something like Magic, who has these rotations and everything's very organized. I mean, it took a long time for Magic to get there, but now they have this whole system where there's a core set each year, and it pairs up with the core set from the year before and the year that's coming, and there's always at least six, two core sets and two expansions present in the current format. I feel like, you know, it's really hard to compare something like that to Star Wars, where you right now we only have a year's worth of stuff. The number of cards is only in the number of, we're in the range of like 80 objectives at this point, spread out over six factions. You know, there was a discussion about how when Magic first came out, Mono Red was way over the curve, and it wasn't per se because it was better. It was because it was the easiest, most straightforward deck to play. And, it probably is really inconvenient that Sith happens to be red in color. And the mono red decks in Star Wars seem to be really just obvious, strong decks. And it takes some time, I think, in any type of game for alternative ways of playing and means of playing to pan out. I mean, we had a conversation about Scum and Villainy, and one of the questions was like, for Scum and Villainy, what is the first pod you put in the Scum and Villainy deck? And Tiny jokingly was like, Palpatine. And the response there was like, yeah, well, that makes sense because bounty hunters don't do anything else by themselves. Don't do anything by themselves. They need to be told to do something by some figure or something like that. It's more support and kind of like the light bulb turned and like Neil has already supplied since coming home from Worlds. He was like, I think I have a Scum deck that works now.
That sounds like Neil.
Yeah, it's fun.
And it looks amazing, Neil, by the way.
Oh, I'm glad. I wasn't sure if you'd gotten a chance to look at it yet.
Can that
be our Worlds deck?
Yeah. Where is this for Worlds?
Neil, why did you let Ben stifle your creativity before Worlds? Oh, boy.
So that would be my takeaway from Worlds, is that, like, we're still in this phase where... A Palpatine Vader deck is obvious. It's strong. But, I mean, we haven't added that many Sith pods, Sith objective sets, to the game since the game came out, right? It's only now, I don't know how the numbers are off the top of my head, but there were 7 Sith objectives in the core, and I think we've only added somewhere like another 7 or 8 to the game at this point, right? So to be like, well, Sith is overpowered, and it's because... Palpatine is so strong, it's also because Palpatine is only 1/14 of the the options that you have for building a deck.
Yeah. And Palpatine's just a good card. I mean, he's going to be in every deck that can run it until the pool gets better. I mean, it's just
until
how
the next
games
Palpatine
work.
Comes out.
Yeah. It's just how games work. Whatever the best cards are, they're going to see play. And those are good cards. So hopefully as the pool expands, it'll get better. Another quick Magic comparison. In Magic, in those early sets, there was a really broken card that you could blow up to get 3 resources out of on turn 1, and that ended up being a problem.
Lessons weren't 100% learned in the industry from that one.
People don't always read the history books. Let me just say that.
Was it called Seat of Power?
Yeah. That's a good point. That's an interesting point. Like, there is a card like that in Game of Thrones, but there isn't a card like Palpatine in Game of Thrones. There's no card you can put down with Seat of Power where you're like, I win turn 1. Ha! Whereas when you do that with Palpatine, your opponent just looks at you, shakes their head, and they're like, you got to be kidding me.
Especially because that's all they play turn 1 and they keep 4 cards in their hand.
Yeah, exactly.
And cancel the Sith is out and they draw back up to 5 and it's just like, oh, cool.
Yep. Now I can do nothing. Awesome. Thanks. That was a fun game. Yep. So let's see. Anything else we want to say before we go? Any final thoughts? Any final thoughts about your trip to Minnesota?
I'll wait for next year.
I'd like to start and say... I'd like to thank my teammates. I had a really great time traveling with all the guys from SoCal, both Star Wars and Game of Thrones. It was really fun staying in the same hotel with you guys and just hanging out all weekend. It really makes events like that a lot more fun when in between rounds you can go talk to your teammates. How are you doing? How are you doing? You can complain to each other about the luck or whatever and then go on to the next round. At the end of the day, go out and have a good time. So thanks, guys. I really had a great time hanging out with you.
You're
yeah,
welcome,
thank you.
Tiny.
I would like to thank FFG and their beautiful new event center. It was a really, really cool place to play. They actually have really good food and drinks, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic. And just a really great place. By and large, everything was really well run. The Star Wars had a little delay starting, but it was the first day of tournaments, so maybe it's a little understandable. And just everyone was super nice, and it was a great event.
Well, thank you guys for stealing the obvious. I really appreciate you leaving me with some variation of, it was really great to meet everybody who I met. which is actually the truth. That wasn't supposed to be sarcastic sounding. I thought if it was. I really enjoyed getting to know some of the, not just fans, but other just Star Wars aficionados out there and people who are very passionate about the game and how the game works. So that was really fun. It was really nice meeting. I got to spend a lot of time talking with Eric, who is one of the designers currently for Star Wars. Not just talking about Star Wars, just talking about FFG in general and working there and participating in these types of events and the types of things, just letting him kind of just talk about how he got to where he was. And that was a lot of fun, learning kind of that type of just in general information that anything he was like giving me was kind of like, oh yeah, this is exciting stuff. And then lastly, I'm just really looking forward to going again next year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, me too. I'm definitely hoping to make this a yearly activity. And I do want to second what Ben said. All the FFG employees I've gotten to know over the last couple of years have been really great people. They're really nice and go out of their way to be friendly to the player base, which kind of surprised me. I thought that they would sort of hold themselves off, more aloof, not really want to talk to the player base. But it just really hasn't been the case. They've all been really, really nice guys, and it's been great getting to know them. So thanks again for listening, everybody, and we'll see you all next year, and I hope you enjoy season 2 of the podcast. So until next time.
Tiny means next. By next year, he means like next year at Worlds. He doesn't mean like we're not going to have another podcast until the new year.
Yes, that is correct.
All right. Okay.
All right. So until next time.
May the force be with you.